welcome to episode 26 of To the Unknown Pod. This is the podcast where, again, we who are just dads and Bitcoiners and husbands and friends get together and just hang out and talk about things that we found helpful on Twitter. My name is Jordan Bush. I am the executive director of TGFB Media, which exists to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. Today, I am joined by two-thirds of the normal Tuesday crew, Oshawa Hawthorne, Ryan Finley. I'll allow you guys to introduce yourselves just this once.
Sup, Jordan. Oshawa Hawthorne, executive director of Brilliance Labs, or a startup incubator for kingdom-focused projects in Portland, Oregon, and we're working on some global projects with Bitcoin as well.
Hi, Jordan. Great to be here. My name is Ryan Finley, father of six. I'm an entrepreneur. I work with my kids a lot on their ventures, and yeah, it's good to be here.
Grateful for you guys. Ryan, for those of you who may have heard from the last episode, we still have just decided he's just kind of abandoned us. So you can submit your resume if you'd like to replace him. If you think you do a good job, make a video for us and we'll have that ready. And consider
Matt,
you mean? Sorry, who did I say? Ryan?
Ryan.
Yes,
Matt. Yeah, it's Matt. I'm sorry.
Matt,
we miss you. But there's open auditions.
Correct.
No, I was kidding.
Matt is in Italy with his wife and six kids. So they're having lots of fun over there. We'll have lots to talk about when he gets back. He's been shooting us tweets and what's going on there is pretty wild. But today, guys, we are talking about low time preference parenting. This has become a pretty common theme on this podcast, given how many kids we have between the four of us. I believe as of last count, what was it? Is it 25? I think 24 going into 25. Just to get everybody up to speed. Oh, go ahead.
Almost 25? Are we almost to 25?
Well, we're pro life people here, so we are 25, Ryan. I don't know what's going on in Portland. Okay, but what's going on in Oregon? So, for those of you who are not keeping track at home, I have four kids with number five due in about 3 weeks. Oshu has eight kids. He has one who's about, I guess, 3 months old, and they just are getting ready to drop off their oldest at college.
6 months old, and then almost 19.
Wild. And then Ryan's got, his oldest is 19 as well. His youngest is four.
Elijah
just turned 19.
Yeah.
Second oldest.
Yeah, Elijah turned.
Wow.
Yeah, oldest is almost 20. Yeah.
Almost 20, okay. And then youngest is six?
Yep.
Yeah. And then, obviously, as we mentioned, Matt has six as well. So we have a bunch of kids. So parenting is something that comes up a lot. And so we are blessed to be joined by two of the speakers from the Bitcoin for Everyone conference, the Bitcoin conference in Portland a couple weeks ago. Ryan and Oshawa had the opportunity to present about this exact topic. So we just thought, you know what, this would be a great thing to talk about in more detail. And so I don't know. Well, I'll let you guys kind of take the floor and just kind of take it where you will.
Yeah. Well, first, as we get into that, I'd love to introduce my oldest, who we're actually in South Bend, Indiana right now. We took the whole crew in our big transit van driving east on a road trip to bring my oldest, Abigail, to college in Michigan. So she's going to Hillsdale. Which creates the most interesting conversations. Either there's a blank look of like, Michigan, okay, whatever, great, happy for you, or sorry it happened. Like they just have no reference, or there's two other common like extreme responses. One is like the wow. I get to they want to shake my hand. You're a parent of a Hillsdale student? Wow, how'd you do that? Or like, oh, I hear that's where all the future Christian elite go to. So like apparently there's some like secret elite club that you get to join when you walk down and you graduate from Hillsdale or something. Or it's the opposite. And this is actually, so my mom is not a believer. She has some different perspectives on life and politics than I have, but she did her own little research of where her granddaughter's going, and apparently if you Google Hillsdale, you find out that it's basically Donald Trump's school, and she's going to like the, this is like far right indoctrination camp. And I had to explain to her, I said, Mom, actually Hillsdale's been around longer than Donald Trump. I mean, like, it's literally like as old as like Harvard and Yale. Like, it's been around a long time. Donald Trump will come and go. By God's grace, Hillsdale will still be there. So she's going off to school. She's with me. I don't know how much I got to move over the camera for her to say hi.
Hey, Abigail.
Hey, Abigail.
But how about this? Let's do just a short interview. I'll ask her a single question, actually about our parenting session, because she was there. We had the whole crew like filling the room with all our kids. It was like
at the conference.
But Abigail, what stood out to you about our parenting talk? Was there anything helpful or interesting or totally inconsistent with how we actually have parented and lived our lives?
Terrific. It's easier for me to narrate what you talked about than to, off the top of my head, answer that. I mean,
we're going to need you to speak in your presentation voice, Abigail.
Okay. I mean, I think the strangest part was hearing it, because I'm not as familiar with the Bitcoin community and the people that were in the room. It was as though he was talking to all of his friends and people that all agreed with him, but he was doing it in Portland, Oregon. And so for me sitting there, it's like, okay, yeah, this is all normal for Dad to be saying this, but has he quite realized who he's talking to? And so
who, I don't know who it was. I don't know if you noticed this, Ryan. So there was at least one gal who walked out in the middle of our session. It may have been before or after you said that women should stay at home and raise the kids while the dads go off and work. We did say that. But no, I think that's a great point, is that we brought to it a Christian worldview, and a worldview that some would say is very traditional, in the sense that, yeah, dads should provide for their wives and kids. And that if you want to not outsource parenting to the state and the government, and not like have kids that are raised as essentially autonomous, autonomous midwit. That's right. Then you actually have to invest in parenting them.
And I mean, I think that's not a wrong conversation to have with people, but it might have been a little easier if you'd had more time in which to explain your assumptions and explain why they were good assumptions, because otherwise you have to be talking to an audience that is either willing to listen to you to see what on earth you're trying to get at, or agrees with you.
I think she's right.
Yeah, I was, I absolutely agree. I think we were limited to, was it 20 minutes or 30? Yeah, that was challenging. My main point there was just that there's nobody better in the world to raise their children than the mothers of those children. And there's a lot of voices in our culture that downplay that. And I was, just kind of sharing, not just from a Bitcoin perspective, because I think one of the things that parents who educate their own kids, they get to impart to those kids is like a high agency and an ability to think for themselves and really, really wrestle with things. But also, just what's actually best for those kids and what's best for them long term. And I think, I don't think our culture understands how much harm they do to kids, just sending them away from their parents, even from a really young age. And that's. So I was like encouraging, hoping to have an impact there. So,
Yeah, I just think it's one of these things. I mean, as somebody who was sitting there and thoroughly enjoying it, it was funny just to think about these things that you're saying, which would have been the most normal vanilla things in the entire world up until like 5 minutes ago. They come across as very bracing, like when you hear them like espouse. And again, like you guys weren't advocating radical things. You're just basically, again, saying something like mom should stay home like with their kids, which again, everybody practiced, you know, and everyone knew this. But I think one of the things that just, yeah, it was bracing hearing it all at one time. But again, I'm, and this is a topic for another episode, is I'm fully of the, I think this is one of the things you see throughout the scriptures, is you see like God's people speaking in very bracing ways that are very non-PC and that are often offensive. And again, you guys weren't even offensive at all in your presentation or your manner or anything like that. But just the content of what you were saying, there definitely were, you know, people who were offended by it. But again, actually, to the contrary, at the same time, I think I was actually surprised about how little pushback you guys got. And there were actually a fair number of people in the audience who had public school educations who basically said it was the worst thing that ever happened to them. And so I think that I do think that we're kind of getting to a point where you've had people who've experienced, they've experienced public school education. They've experienced a lot of the stuff that comes with that. And because of how bad it was, they're willing to hear critiques of it, and they're willing to consider alternatives to a degree that maybe they wouldn't have been before the kind of the cultural moment that we've been in, or really for the first time in recent cultural memory.
if I 100%, and if I could redo it, I would have given, you know, a very applicable illustration, and I would have. So Portland is a huge animal city. Like everyone has dogs and cats. It's like, yeah. And animal adoption is like the biggest thing in the world there. And like, I would have brought up the fact that in general, in nature, it is not controversial to say that baby animals, baby birds and wildlife and dogs and cats and things like that are best raised by their mothers. And it's not controversial. And actually, I mean, you literally will get people that will go to war fighting for animals to be able to be raised by their mothers. But then when it comes to humans, it's offensive to say in our culture today that children should be raised by their mothers.
Yeah.
Now that's just absolutely insane. Yep. And it's just so, and how we got there, obviously that's a longer discussion, but yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Any other questions? Or Ryan, do you have any questions for Abigail? Any other things that you want to ask her? While you're thinking, I'll ask one. So Abigail, I mean, you were homeschooled up until what grade?
Ninth.
Up until ninth grade. And then you went to like a Catholic school, right?
Yeah. Technically not a Catholic school, but there were a lot of Catholics there.
Okay. So it was like a classical Christian school. Okay. So what was that transition like? Did you feel, you know, equipped for that, you know, with homeschool? Because I think one of the things that you hear, one of the pushbacks that you hear from people who don't have any history with homeschooling is, well, what are you going to do for social activities? Like, how are you going to know how to talk to people, basically, if you've been, you know, put in a closet for up until you're in ninth grade? So, you know, what did that look like? You know, how did you feel, I guess, maybe leading up to that year about homeschool? Was it something you enjoyed? Is it something that was, you know, wasn't your favorite? Or, you know, and then when you did make the transition, what was that like for you?
Yeah. Okay. So I have to explain a few things first before I can quite answer that question. First, you have to consider that right before my ninth grade year was COVID. And so while Oregon and Portland, and so they locked down pretty much everything. So, and then also I'm slightly more introverted than some people, and I have a very large family.
Yeah.
And so the introvertedness means that I'm not your social butterfly that wants to be with people all of the time. And that doesn't have anything to do with me being homeschooled. Second is that I have such a large family that, I mean, my family was the size of my class when I did end up going to school. So
that's cool.
Much of a difference.
Yeah.
And okay, with the COVID thing. So I've been home. I was homeschooled up until ninth grade. And depending on the year, we do different homeschool co-ops, whether that was Classical Conversations or another one that we just, a bunch of moms started and has since faded away. But once a week, I would have that school classroom-esque thing. And then outside of school, there would be church, or there'd be sports, or there'd be friends' houses. So I had that interaction. I also had books, which are, believe it or not, especially if they're old books, actually good for that sort of thing, because you learn how to think and how people talk, and you learn interesting things. And then you, being me, you want to go tell everyone about those books. And so it's a helpful conversation starter.
So you're saying you didn't need Taylor Swift in order to learn how to converse with your friends. That wasn't a required type of character.
Whether it was a mixture of COVID or my being an introvert or...
You guys all had to wear masks your first...
There was that.
Video and masks.
No, there was no video. That was only if people got sick.
Okay.
But yes. So the transition between homeschool to 5 days a week, 8 hours a day with lots of people I don't know, school the whole day long...
Yeah.
Was a big transition, and it took me an entire year to process all of the teenage emotions.
100%.
And it wasn't drama. I'm very thankful for that, but it was as it felt like drama because I was used to laid back homeschool kids.
Correct. Well, great. Yeah, thank you. Okay, and so then what's the second part of that? Second part was, you know, once you were in school, it took you a year to get adjusted. You know, what was your, you know, how did you, you know, like what the rest of your school year, and then how do you feel like it prepared you like for college? Do you feel like it, I mean, are you happy? Do you feel like you're prepped to go, or are you going to kind of be chasing your parents down the street in the van when they're pulling out of there?
I think I would have been far less prepared for college without it, because it would have been that adjustment to 5 day a week school. Maybe it's not actually 8 hours a day, because for some reason college is some reason you're like classes each day. I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll discover the workload is actually more than I think it is. From what I've heard other alumni from my school saying, in general, the first 2 years of college are supposedly much easier than they are for most people, given the rigor of the high school I went to. But then again, Hillsdale is also known for its rigor, so we'll see what that is like.
Yeah. Ryan, any questions?
We talk a lot about, I'd be curious to hear things that you're most encouraged by your generation. And things you're most concerned about from your generation, just as, you know, you're out of high school now, going into college, and just kind of, it's like a moment of reflection between the two seasons of life. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on those two.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you could start with the negative, maybe the concerned and then encouraged, so we can end on a positive.
Yeah, it's easier to think of. So here's a school-wise one. So in school, we had to read both the Iliad and the Odyssey, as well as a bunch of other philosophical works and all sorts of stuff. But the Iliad, it must have been the Odyssey. And so I'm an avid reader, and the curriculum at the school builds you up to such a point that these books aren't as overwhelmingly hard as they might be if you just crack them open on your own.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing, as we were in the middle of the Odyssey, that there were other classical schools in our area that didn't actually read the Iliad and Odyssey, but they read graphic novelizations of them because they had found that they were too difficult to read for their 11th and 12th grade students. And while I do understand that our culture has, our reading capabilities have dwindled, yet there was an entire classroom of us that could do it. And I was reading the Iliad at 12 with a whole nother other classroom of people. And so I love books, and the lack of appreciation as well as the lack of ability for some of these older, more complex books is disappointing, sad. It's also, it's their loss for not being able to read these books that were staples of curriculums set for centuries.
Yeah.
Is it an issue with thinking, do you like that the generation isn't being trained to think? Is it attention span? Is it vocabulary? Like what is?
I think it's probably all of them. And I don't know how much to lay at the foot of the teacher for not being able to guide the class through it. And depending on the translation you read, some will be easier to read than others. And in ages past, people wrote English grammar in the same way the Romans used Latin grammar. And as people have written more and more books, we've stopped doing that and given and used more simpler language construction. And so an older book will often be harder to follow because the verbs are in strange places.
Yeah.
But
I do think this is one of those constant, I mean, you see this principle being fleshed out in like 100 different places. You see this in churches as well. You have churches who will, again, they'll try to dumb everything down to the lowest common denominator, and then they'll present it. You have other churches that, again, are they just kind of, this is the standard. You know, we're not saying anybody who isn't up to this, you know, is dumb, or like we're not making fun of them, but like we're not gonna lower. And so you know, there's just variety of philosophies, and there's ideas that go with that. But I do think, yeah, the danger with just constantly trying to dumb everything down for everyone is, I mean, it's going to have societal consequences, and it is. And then also, again, I think so one of the things you're talking about is just the, you know, your body nutritionally can adapt itself to really whatever you're eating, which is actually an extraordinary capability of the body. Like God has designed your body to be able to get used to eating just utterly atrocious things and make do with it. And so you see that just with you see that reflected in a similar way with the people's, the diet of their mind, right? Like, so if you're consuming, Taylor Swift and, you know, her banal takes on romance and all these things, and if you're, you know, you're consuming, videos and all these kind of things, you're training your body and your mind to expect and to desire and to enjoy certain things, and you know, training your mind to you know, be accustomed to a certain sort of thing and to not be accustomed to other things. And so, yeah, I mean, you do want to, like, that's something that doesn't change quickly. And it's something that, given that that's true, you should be want to, especially in your most formative years, you should be wanting to help students and, you know, young people, you know, move along this process and be challenged to grow as much as they can during that period. Because if you're not, then it's just going to get harder once you involve having to work for a living and all these other things. There's going to be the tendency to just kind of drift with time, not you know, sharpen up as time goes on.
Yeah, I just pulled up that tweet that said 25% of American high school students are functionally illiterate.
Share that joker there, Ryan. Share that joker on your
screen. I put it down. I put it down
in the chat. Okay.
Yeah. I'll find it. 40 to 60% of college freshmen need remedial math, English, or both. Like I almost equate it to like exercising, like running. And I would say the majority of kids aren't reading books at all. And so it's like functionally not being able to run or jog. And then all of a sudden, yeah. It's That's one thing that scares me. And I've actually, it's just even recently, I've been on a big push, like encouraging all of our kids, all six of them, to be reading multiple books at a time. And now even more consciously pushing them off their phones, less Twitter, less like, especially the younger ones, like no social media, but the older ones way like just weaning themselves off of it. Just because it's not helpful at all. And, we're not, that's a very, like we're in a very dangerous trajectory when it comes to that. Like, some of the most valuable things we can learn, God's word, but also like from dead authors who wrote like really incredible books a long time ago. But if people don't read, then they're not, filling their mind with those books. So yeah. It's kind of a dangerous trend.
Yeah. And again, this, go ahead, Ron. Go ahead, Ash.
I'll find the tweet. But Elon Musk had, several months ago, he tweeted on the Iliad. This is 8/24/24. Here, actually, let me put these, what's the best way to share? I'll put them in the Signal. Because some people might be listening and they're like, okay, how irrelevant can you be? Or like how just, okay, nerdy, irrelevant. Okay, great. You read the Iliad. But how helpful, how relevant is that? And so here you have the richest man in the world saying, can't recommend the Iliad enough, best as Penguin audiobook. And then I shared one more tweet where he's listing other audiobook recommendations. And most of these are like the ancient literature, The Story of Civilization by Durant. The Gaelic Wars by Caesar. Genghis Khan by Weatherford. Like these are meaty, weighty books. And I think it's easy to just imagine like Elon Musk is this technologist that spends all his day just like trolling on Twitter and doing these crazy like sprints to build a rocket ship and like taking risks and all this, but surely he's not an intellectual. Surely he's not sitting down reading or listening to the audiobook of the Iliad or the Gaelic Wars. But, and maybe that's not what he's doing today. Maybe that was a part of his formation as a younger man. I don't know for sure, but either way, these are the audiobooks he listens to. Like these are the big ideas and the thinkers that influenced him, and for us to raise up the next generation. I remember having this. It was a call. Ryan was on it. Jordan, I don't think you were on this. We were talking to a certain Bitcoin influencer guy that has really strong opinions about parenting and Bitcoin and a lot of things. I won't mention his name, but he was arguing against college. And there's really good reasons why you won't send your kids to college. And in fact, the short list that I have of approved colleges, I can count on one hand, right? So there's a lot of huge problems in higher education, including Christian higher education. You're taking risks as you send your kids across the country. There's huge advantages of building your home and family network near you, especially if you have a home business and a home farm and those various things. But this guy was arguing for why, like, you need to just train your kids in becoming full stack developers, and you need to just press into computer programming, and that's where all the money is. That's where they're going to be most like productive and efficient in their work. And I'm like, dude, if you have a whole community of like Christian coders, and that's all you have, you're gonna be maybe very wealthy, but you're not gonna influence society in the long term. you're not going to have deep thinkers. Like, who are going to be your pastors? Who are going to be your philosophers and your theologians and your storytellers and your myth makers? Like, these are all these important culture-making elements of society that is we still need in building a Christian society, even low a Christian nation. But that's for another conversation.
Yeah, it is. I think the pushback though would be, but Oshawa, we can make so much money and get our work done in such a small amount of time that we still have time to do other work. You know, like I was just reading this article or I was listening to a video where these guys were talking about how the vast majority, like some crazy percentage of just people who've influenced the world, including people who were experts in science and experts in other things. Like most of them had like and a lot of authors, Churchill was one of them. There's a bunch of authors who they basically wrote for 3 to 4 hours a day on average. Like that was their work day. And then they would move on to other aspects. They'd work at other things. And so again, I don't know. I see exactly what you're saying. It is true that if you're just basically saying, hey, all we needed to know is how to code, and then that will fix everything. It's like, no. At the same time, I do think, because I think, and this is a conversation for another day, I think that we're getting to a point where people are going to have to, by necessity, work multiple jobs. I think a higher percentage, and I think you're going to have a higher percentage of pastors specifically, because you mentioned that one. I think you're going to have to, we're going to have an increasing percentage of pastors who are going to be forced into bivocational work, or at least to consider those things, and at least as part-time things, just because of things like currency devaluation and a lot of these effects. So, I don't know. I think there's some truth there that I think is worth considering, but I definitely don't think it's as straightforward as, coding fixes everything, because we're looking at, I just had a call this morning with one of our brothers in the Christian, text group with a bunch of Christian Bitcoin guys. And he basically was like, hey, I'm looking at, like, he's a programmer, full stack developer. And he's like, yeah, I'm looking at like 4 more years of being able to do my job and get paid, being able to get paid for my job. And then I'm like preparing my extra strategy for when, AI programming is to the point where they don't need me anymore, And so I think that that's another real wake up call for the techno optimists or the programming optimists who just think that, you can do that and then forget about having to really do anything else outside of that.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Abigail, thank you so much. You are free to hang out or free to...
Wait. What was the optimistic thing? Oh, okay. What was... We can't leave people hanging. We gotta...
What are you optimistic about with your generation, Abigail?
The funny thing is that I'm actually not on social media a lot, and so I don't... Most of the things I draw on are from my own experience. And it's hard to say a lot about the culture as a whole or the generation as a whole because of that. I mean,
what about, like, I know you do the current events or current, like, popular issues class last year, and you guys spent a lot of time thinking about
more
current events.
We read the Code of Hammurabi.
The Code of Hammurabi.
Yes, it was current events. It's world issues. That's not country issues or global issues. That's in the sense of world, as in you have like car world or family world, or it's more the group of people thing idea. And so the social fabric issue that you would then go write about was actually find something that helps the social fabric.
Here, I have even maybe a perhaps more interesting question that will tell you to our audience about Bitcoin. And this is a hopeful thing. So, Abigail, so we've spent time talking about Bitcoin. You actually listen in a lot to, like, Uncle Ryan and I when we're talking about Bitcoin, and when Jordan comes over and hangs out. How has Bitcoin shaped your view of the future? And how are you using Bitcoin in your life as you're going off to college?
Well, I mean, it's such a topic of conversation in the household that you can't get away from it. And so you have to become a couple.
Well done, Ash.
And so that then means that it's an automatic part of how I think about finances. And so, yeah, it's...
How did we teach you kids about investing, and how did that lead into having
Bitcoin? Well, once upon a time, we were given a weekly, and then it was a monthly, and then it was a sometimes, I don't know when, allowance. And we had three jars, and they had construction paper wrapped around them and taped on and had names on them. And one was giving, one was spending, one was savings. And I don't quite remember the divvying up portion, but it was 50% or more was in savings, and then the giving and spending might have been equal. I don't remember. But for the longest while, the savings jar was never touched. And then, I don't know how old I was, but we started talking about Apple stocks and investing money. And then at one point, you wanted to convince me to help you buy an iPad and for education purposes, and I didn't want to. And then Bitcoin became a topic of conversation, and by that point, there was no allowance, and it was just money I'd made by working. But, mm-hmm. Yes.
And has saving in Bitcoin served you well?
Very well, yes. Yes.
So how much Bitcoin do you have?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Hey,
so they're excellent.
Well done.
But it has to test.
Three
episodes. All the other.
Yes, you should.
All of it.
Let's go.
I'd also like to know the opportunity cost of that iPad purchase. If you would have just purchased Bitcoin, what would be worth like $20,000?
How much would an iPad have been? Like $300 or $400?
Yeah, I don't even remember that. Those
it was a random conversation. Yeah. I don't think you really wanted an iPad.
When I was orange pilling, Osh, my main foe was Apple stock. That was the giant that I had to slay to convince Osh.
I was buying Apple stock since before the iPhone came out.
Oh,
it served me well.
Yeah.
And we had to get over Benjamin Graham might not have encouraged people to buy Bitcoin.
Yep.
Buffett. I was an investor.
S.P. Benjamin Graham. All right. Well, thank you again, Abigail. We appreciate you, and we're praying for you as you go off to school.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Talk soon, Abigail. Good luck.
Yeah. And next time, Ryan, you're going to bring a couple of your boys on, or Jordan.
Yeah.
You're going to bring someone on.
Yeah. My oldest is sick right now, but yeah, we need to get at least one or two men in here. Ash, how much more time do you have, man?
I can do like 20 minutes.
Okay, cool. All right. So in terms of other things, I know you guys have your presentation that you guys gave at the conference. Is there anything that you guys want to just share from that? Just things you feel like would be, given the conversation we've already had, that you guys want to display or show up?
Ryan, you want to talk about the goal and kind of break down that the Lewis quote? Does that sound good?
I'm going to pull it up.
Yeah. So
that Lewis quote,
what we tried to do. So I kind of laid the philosophical foundation of low time preference parenting. And then Ryan worked through the practical how to's. So I asked this question. I said, what is the goal of low time preference parenting? What do we want our kids to be like as adults? Right. And the issue that I observe is we know, okay, we don't just want to breed NPCs and midwits, but we go about the process very haphazardly and not intentionally. And there's not a clear goal that parents have. And so I tried to lay out what we thought was of a foundational goal. And you'll notice it's not explicitly Christian, because we didn't have a particularly Christian audience, but at the same time, it is built on a Christian worldview. And so this is a quote. It's actually from the Hillsdale College Honor Code. And we think this is a pretty good goal to shoot towards in raising kids. And it goes like this. The student is honorable in conduct, honest in word and deed, dutiful in study and service, and respectful of the rights of others. Through education, the student rises to self-government. And that was this idea that we keyed in on. And in particular, I think that there's a good bridge to your average Bitcoiner where they're like, yes, sovereign individual, self-government. That sounds great. But I think Bitcoin only gets you half of the way there. Libertarianism only gets you half of the way there. It helps you not be the state kind of cookie cutter midwit, but it doesn't get you the root of self-government, which is virtue, which is what the honor code calls the liberty of the soul. So here's a little bit more unpacking of that honor code. Self-government is a challenge with the promise of a rich reward, liberty of the soul. A soul enjoys liberty when it is ordered, when its passions are ruled by reason and its habit is virtue. The college exists for the improvement and ultimate happiness of its students. So here they're arguing that this idea of self-government has a foundation to it. It has a reward to it, which is liberty of the soul, and it has a foundation, and that foundation is passions that are ruled by reason and a habit of virtue, and that leads to this ultimate happiness. And then this is the quote that we actually didn't have time to really tease out, but I think it'll be really interesting to talk about on this.
Hey, Ash.
Yeah.
Hey, Ash, go back a little bit. Go back to that last, because you were breaking up a little bit. So I just want to, for the sake of the audio, I just want to read it. Because if people are watching, then they can see it. But if they're just listening, there you go. So the last part, so I'll read the last two sentences. It says, a soul enjoys liberty when it is ordered, when its passions are ruled by reason and its habit is virtue. The college exists for the improvement and ultimate happiness of its students. So yeah, it's excellent. Okay, next page.
Yeah, so the reward of self-government is liberty of the soul, and the path to it, the foundation of it is a rightly ordered soul, right, with passions ruled, with virtue as a habit. Now here's that Lewis quote. He says, I believe man is happier and happy in a richer way if he... Yeah, my connection keeps disconnecting.
Gosh, you're breaking up. You sound like you're in the...
What are you getting?
Robotic.
my connection's in and out.
Oh.
Go for it. You read it.
You're speaking in tongues. Okay, I'll read it. I believe man is happier. This is C.S. Lewis. I believe man is happier in a richer way if he has the, quote, the freeborn mind, end quote. But I doubt whether he can have this without economic independence, which the new society is abolishing. For economic independence allows an education not controlled by government. And in adult life, it is the man who needs and asks nothing of the government who can criticize its acts and snap his fingers at its ideology. Who will talk like that when the state is everyone's schoolmaster and employer? This quote is just absolutely bonkers. I mean, this is... One of my favorite sayings is that the logic is a time machine, and it is literally like C.S. Lewis got in a time machine and teleported to year of our Lord 2025, took a quick peek around, and then hopped back in and went back and penned this. Because, I mean, this is, we're seeing this all over the place. You know, before what's it called? What was the big funding apparatus? America.
Big Beautiful Bill.
No, the one that got revealed to be just like slush fund for...
Oh, USAID.
USAID. Before that kind of got found out, I mean, you have all these people who are on the government dime. They're sitting there, and again, they're terrified of losing this money, so they're not going to say anything against the government to risk losing it. And there's a whole host of more examples where this exact principle is at work. Like whoever, if you take the king's coin, you are the king's man. Like that's how this works in a lot of cases. And so again, Lewis understood this. He articulated the danger in this. And so, yeah, who will talk? Who will tell the government that they disagree, and who will stand up to the government when the government's paying their bills? Like at the end of the day, Lewis basically said, yeah, it's going to be tough to do that. And you're going to, you know, bear the, you know, you're going to basically basically people are going to be able to call you, you know, if it's true or not. They're going to be able to say, hey, you're being hypocritical. Like, you're telling me not to depend on the state while you're, you know, taking, you're on the state dole, you know.
Which is a huge reason why we're Bitcoiners, because
correct,
the state has been allowed to get as big as it is because of monetary debasement, and they're printing unlimited amounts of money to fund the ever-growing deficit, which if people were straight taxed for all the money that they were spending, there would have already been several revolutions between, you know, when they first started this debacle, whatever it was, 125 years ago. 112 years ago.
Yeah. And that really is the issue, right? It's this, and we've talked about this before, it's this passive aggressive form of taxation, secret taxation. So we're just going to call it something different. We're going to, I mean, it's very ancient, right? This is, I mean, when you see Satan in the garden, what does he do? He literally, you know, basically says, did God really say that? You know, he asks Eve like what God has told them. And then he says, did God really say that? And so he's playing with the words. He's redefining language. And this is what you see governments doing. And you see governments doing the same thing. They're changing the nature of tax. Oh, this isn't really a tax. We're not going to treat this like a tax. And that means that it's not a tax. It's like, no, that's not how that works. You know, this still is a tax. It functions just like a tax. So even if you don't want to call it that because it's unpopular and will help people to see the reality of what's going on, it still doesn't change the underlying reality.
No.
Josh, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry.
Try again. You're good.
Do we want to rapid fire through some of those end slides, or what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So I can go. You can just touch on it.
I do want to say one more thing, because this is worthy of its own episode too, is all of us as Americans and people in the West, like we want practical solutions. Okay. And there absolutely is a place for this, especially in Christian circles. I think I know for me, like one of the things that I started looking for, practical resources around parenting and practical resources, meaning like resources that could give me practices that I could start implementing into my home, into my family. So, you know, that will help produce the type of outcomes that we see the scriptures say that we should seek, and just that will produce good outcomes. And so there's nothing wrong with desiring those. And we do need lots of those at the same time. And so there's one group of people who needs to hear that. At the same time, there's a danger to only looking for pragmatic things and for always looking for these very, again, dumbed down, lowest common denominator, solutions rather than, you know, reading deeply and thinking deeply and becoming a different type of person. God, he does want us to have practical things, and we do need to implement practical solutions and practical, practices in our lives, but it's not, you should be very suspicious of your desire to want that too much. Because again, there's a lot of this where, a lot of parenting and a lot of marriage and a lot of just being a human is just, it's got to do with relationship. It's got to do with, reading and changing as you read the scriptures and changing as you spend time with other people and spend time with other books, as Abigail was mentioning. So I think that, you know, those are both dangers to be aware of. And it's for you to have the wisdom to distinguish which of those you are more naturally bent towards appreciating. And, you know, once you figure out which one you're more naturally bent towards appreciating, then maybe, okay, I'm going to intentionally spend more time over here. So I just want to say that because these are very practical solutions that Ryan talked about at the end. And there's, for some people, it's like, yeah, you definitely need these. And so, you know, free yourself by finding these and you know, being able to have the wisdom of other people who've walked before you in order to help implement some things.
Yeah. Thank you. You spoke just like a philosopher.
Yeah, we were just...
I would say that, yeah.
We were finishing up Ecclesiastes this morning, and yeah, the challenge to fear God and obey his commandments is like, ultimately, if you want the fountain and the source of a lot of these encouragements, a lot of these, yeah, that's where they came from. And it was like, I said at the beginning of the talk, like almost all the topics that we were bringing up in our very quick talk, you could talk about each one of them for an hour or three, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, if anything, yeah, they were there, put in there to encourage, and maybe it'd be helpful to some who are watching, listening. So
I'll read these assumptions really quick and then hand it over to Ryan. If I break up, you guys just start talking. Because I don't know when the connection
sounds good now.
But these were the assumptions we had is stacking kids is even more rewarding than stacking sats. And we believe that children are a blessing. The efficiencies of scale also apply to having kids. Above three is free, is how I like to say it. Now, the reality of how expensive my life is right now, it kind of begs to differ. But there are efficiencies of scale, and it's not as hard as you people think. They usually tap out too early. And as long as you've stewarded well the health of your wife, and I'll be controversial, and you don't vaccinate your kids so that they don't get all jacked up and crazy. Like, if you're able to set trajectories of discipline well, and you teach authority to your kids, this is what I say, there's good and bad authority. You need to teach the difference. And then finally, if you start with discipline before they are two, you can trust them with freedom when they are 16. By God's grace, we've never had a terrible twos. And like, yes, kids get moody. Kids have ups and downs. And going through puberty is always going to be a challenge. But it doesn't have to be a catastrophe. And you can open up the options and provide freedom because you can trust your 16-year-old because you've taught them discipline and wisdom from when they were young. So those are my assumptions that I shared. And then here's some practical advice. Ryan, you can just tell me if you want me to go forward or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, be consistently low time preference yourself. You know, the reality is you don't expect your kids to be something that you're not. Like, so if you have weaknesses, your kids are going to have those same weaknesses. And so, yeah, it's a good, I said the kids will copy what we do much more than what we say. We got to take care of ourselves. Our culture thinks that love is, you know, completely forgetting about yourself, and it's actually not. Like, it's the whole, the plane's going down, you know, the oxygen mask, put it on yourself first. It enables you to take care of others around you. And it's the same thing with parents, like, father and mother, like, you need to take care of yourself, you know, and I physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And if you don't have anything to pour out into your children. And that has massive implications for the rest of their life. And it changes your home. It changes their, you know, everything. So just encourage parents to take care of themselves. And life's a race. It's a journey. Aspire to finish well. So think about the end often and pace yourself and, encouraging, you know, a happy marriage. Good marriages are, you know, it's a result of proof of work and not somehow finding a perfect match. I mean, our culture through trash movies, everyone's been deceived into thinking, oh, you know, there's this perfect person out there that's going to complete me. And it's the exact opposite. Marriage is a refining, incredible institution that God created, and they take a ton of work, proof of work, like for Bitcoiners. but it's one of the most, like, the biggest things that children need. They need a stable, like, they need their parents to have a stable marriage. I know this is a hard truth. Divorce is the ultimate rug pull on children. The most painful thing a child could possibly go through. Just encouraging you know, couples to date their spouse weekly, guard that time, huge, huge long-term payoff. So, yeah, this is where I got to walk out at this point, where I was encouraging mom to stay home. And I'm just like, when I say this, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to jump into the culture war. I'm just literally, you know, I'm thinking about like the 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old kids. I think about my 6-year-old daughter. She's as happy as you could possibly imagine. And it's because she gets to spend an enormous amount of time with my wife every day. And so I say that with, you know, with that on my heart. And maybe I can encourage a couple parents out there to just to revisit it. There is a cost to it. You have to like budget around it, and you have to reduce your expenses, and somehow, you know, the Lord will provide, you know, if your goal is to honor him. And, yeah, dad has the freedom and the flexibility to be in the children's life. I think that that's such a big one, like literally redesign your life backwards, figure out how to pull that off. It's, you know, the more that can happen, or if it's even like in choosing career, I mean, there's careers that pull dads away from their families for 6 months at a time. And I'm like, dude, that's tough. Like, yeah.
It is. And I've got buddies, you know, I've got buddies who are in the military, you know, again, this is like something where, you know, again, there are people make decisions and they're in situations. And so like there's two sets of things, right? Like there's prescriptive and there's descriptive. There's a lot of the things that are talked about here that you're talking about where it's like, all right, hey, these things are just true. Like these things are just actually true. If with mom staying home, hey, someone's going to be influencing your kids all day long. Like it's either going to be somebody who cares about them and whose well-being is directly tied to their well-being. And so you have mutual incentive alignment, or it's going to be somebody who doesn't necessarily have that. And so it's, you know, there's going to be other things. So this is not to be like personal. This is not like any of these kind of things. There just really are consequences to these things. And then we're good. There's obviously going to be people listening to this who, because of their decision up to this point, you know, they're going to be like, all right, well, you know, I do have to be gone for a few months at a time or something like that, depending on, you know, a few times every couple of years or something like that. And so, you know, this really is just something to, it's like, all right, so, you know, maybe this is an opportunity to, you know, to rethink, like, and to rethink career trajectory. Or maybe this is an opportunity to, you know, to basically compensate and be like, okay, you know, if I'm absolutely in this situation, there's nothing I can do about it for the next, you know, this, for at least the next year and a half or something, you know, where I'm going to be gone for a couple months or a few months or whatever, then how can I, you know, as I'm presenting this to the Lord and basically saying, Lord, this was not a good choice. Like I recognize like this is not producing, this is incentivizing outcomes that are not good. Please help me to find a way out. And then please help me to be faithful with what the situation that I'm in right now in the meantime. You know, this is not what you guys are describing is not something where it's like, all right, well, you know, the ship has sailed on this idea. Like it's not like that at all. And I know that you guys, you know, aren't saying that at all, but for people who are, you know, listening, like this is not some sort of rigid, you know, one size fits all. If you're not 100% perfect at this, then, you know, forget you. Like that's not what's going on here. Like these are just, this is wisdom, practical wisdom, you know, from,
yeah,
you know, millennia.
Yeah. Yeah. And coming out of like, yeah, we put those down there. Like I've been a dad for almost 20 years now. Still a lot to learn. Obviously I don't have everything figured out. Yeah, but it's just, in general, it's encouraging parents to consider the incredible treasure that children are, an incredible responsibility that we have as fathers and mothers to raise our kids well, to fear God and to love him and obey his commandments, and also to take on the responsibility of training them, educating them, and discipling them. And those are huge, like those are the most important tasks in our life. And at the end of our lives, like realistically, they will be like our greatest accomplishments in the world. And in light of that, wrestle with each area of life, like what is most helpful, you know, to my wife and my kids. Not making them an idol, but just being a good steward of them. And And I think there's just too often we get tempted to treasure other things and to make other things more important, you know, and we should always be fighting back. And our, I would say our culture is probably one of the culture in this world is the biggest source of endless temptations to divide our time and our efforts. So,
hey guys, I got to run and pick up my brother-in-law from the airport. I emailed you guys the slides if you want to keep talking about them or if you want to do part two next week.
We're going to get it closed down here. Ash, before you go, we do have one question from Juradical. He's wondering if Hillsdale accepts Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I actually tagged them on Twitter to talk about that. I haven't got an answer yet. So I will be looking into it and so
help them make it happen.
So by God's grace, student debt is a big issue, and I strongly encourage my older kids, if they want to consider college, they got to do it without debt. She basically, she's going to get out of school without debt. I'll just say it like that. And so that's a huge gift. And Bitcoin is a small part of that being able to be an option for her. Whether they accept it or whether daddy accepts it and then pays for the other.
We should talk in the future, kind of what you were describing to me of like kind of your plan for her handling her Bitcoin stuff. I feel like people would really benefit from hearing that if you're willing to share. So Juradical, great question. We will get back to you. Please hold our feet to the fire. We will report back. Again, we are super grateful for you guys. If you guys are not following Ash, Ryan, and I and Matt as well on Twitter, go follow us over there. If you're watching this on YouTube, like and subscribe. This is one way you can incentivize our benevolent overlord algorithm overlords to continue to lead the faithful to more of this content. We follow us on Twitter as well. You can find us there. You can follow TGFB. It's Thank God for BTC on Twitter. And we will be back soon on the next episode.
Hey, big day today. It was the Vice President of Brazil. Holding a copy of Thank God for Bitcoin.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm just doing a finer quick.
Yeah, dude.
How about that, dude? You can go if you need to go.
It says that. We've just said uploaded.
Oh gosh. Well, so, can you leave it open?
Yep.
Yeah. Here we go. We've got Vice President of Brazil spotted with Thank God for Bitcoin book. This is the Brazilian copy or the Portuguese translation.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just wild. So that means,
I know that was one of the
first translations was Portuguese.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the Vice President of Brazil. We do know, I believe Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, has at least two copies. I want to say he has three copies. We've had a number of people give him the book. Should we announce this?
Who got that into their hand? Like,
I honestly don't know. Whoever got that translation, I would imagine. Like, there's a pretty passionate, pretty.
We're gonna split them out.
Yeah,
we need to get them some. Get them a shout out.
Yeah, we do have a very interesting and very exciting announcement that we're gonna be making about TGFB. The book here should be within the next couple months.
Ooh, boy. Awesome.
So yeah, we are just crazy something that's going on. So we are grateful for that, and we'll have more news in the future. So again, we'll see you on Thursday. We'll be back with the Mountain Presbies on episode 27 of To the Unknown Pod. We'll talk to you guys later.